The war in Afghanistan reached a grim milestone this past Tuesday. A roadside bomb in Kabul brought the toll of American dead to over 1,000. After taking 7 years to reach 500 deaths, the war claimed the second 500 American lives in less than 2 years. Now, award-winning filmmaker Laura Poitras has made a new documentary, The Oath. The film details the lives of two brothers-in-law who served as Osama bin Laden's trusted aides in Afghanistan before the September 11th attacks. The first is a man whose name is well known to most Americans, Salim Hamdan, bin Laden's personal driver, who was captured shortly after the U.S. invasion in 2001 and imprisoned in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. As Hamdan's military lawyers navigated the tribunal system in Hamdan versus Rumsfeld, Hamdan's brother-in-law, who goes by the name Abu Jandal, became the narrative focus of the film. Jandal, once known as Al-Qaeda's Emir of Hospitality for his role in Afghanistan, screening new jihadis for bin Laden, now regales young Muslim men in his living room with stories of his days in Al-Qaeda. Living in his homeland of Yemen, Abu Jandal is a graduate of The Dialogue, which is the Yemeni government's re-education camp for imprisoned jihadis. He's a man caught between two oaths, the oath to Al-Qaeda and the oath he pledged to the Yemeni government not to wage jihad after his release from jail. Abu Jandal walks a balancing act between his new life as a father and taxi driver and as a practiced veteran of young Muslims willing to wage jihad. The Oath by Laura Poitras opens tonight at Lemley Sunset 5 Theatre at 800 Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood. Laura Poitras is the acclaimed director of My Country, My Country, which was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Documentary and called by The Village Voice as the definitive non-fiction film about the occupation of Iraq. The New York Times has called her new film, The Oath, quote, both an intimate character study and a wide-ranging critique of the American War on Terror. I spoke with Laura Poitras recently about her new film. Let's start by looking at why you chose this character, the central character in the film, whose alias is Abu Jandal. Why he is your protagonist? And he's a remarkable, very charismatic person, so that part's obvious. But why did you choose him?
I choose him. I went to Yemen looking for a story. I wanted to tell a story about Guantanamo. And then I met Abu Jandal. And Abu Jandal was bin Laden's bodyguard and also ran a guest house in Afghanistan. And it was pretty extraordinary to have somebody who would be willing to go on camera, who's sort of had this amount of information about Al-Qaeda and bin Laden. And he was also the man who recruited Salim Hamdan to Afghanistan. And they later married sisters, so they're related by family. And it was a way to tell the story of, you know, Hamdan's story at Guantanamo and his trial, plus this man who was bin Laden's bodyguard and driving a taxi cab in Yemen. So there was a lot of compelling story reasons to sort of want to enter this world. But there were also, you know, it was an intimidating film to make.
Well, I can imagine a film about Al-Qaeda where they are openly talking about jihad against Americans. And there you are, an American filmmaker. Mm-hmm. Abu Jandal, now in Yemen, is somebody who counsels young men. This man was the bodyguard of Osama bin Laden. He was the emir of hospitality, as he put it. And yet he roams free in Yemen, but his brother-in-law, Salim Hamdan, was locked up for 8 years, tried the first person to be tried in the U.S. military tribunal. Why the difference between the two cases?
You know, that's one of the central sort of mysteries or conundrums of the film. Why is this guy free where, you know, Salim Hamdan and many others just are being held at Guantanamo? And it, you know, I mean, we know that the audience is asking that question. It was certainly the question I was asking as I was, like, sitting across the room from him and saying, well, you know, you seem to know a lot more and than most of the people who were there. You know, why are you free? And I think it's sort of points to that a lot of the people that are being held are the wrong people.
And almost seems sort of random that this man would walk free. But also, I think, does it have to do with the fact that when he was interrogated by the FBI while he was in prison for suspicion of being, I think, involved in the USS Cole bombing, he was in prison when the 9/11 attacks happened. So he was interrogated by the FBI, and he spilled the beans.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, that's something that you learn in the film. I mean, the story is kind of a story about fate. And Salim Hamdan had very bad luck of being captured when he did. And Abu Jandal, who was in prison in 2000, was quite lucky to actually be in prison, because if he'd been captured in Afghanistan, he would have probably been sent to Guantanamo. So the story is that he went back home in 2000. I think he was ready to leave Afghanistan. The USS Cole bombing happened. They rounded up a lot of jihadis. He was one of them. He was put in prison. And then he was, right after 9/11, interrogated by Ali Soufan, an FBI agent. And it was a very significant interrogation. And I think that, you know, that's kind of what, in terms of the film, there's a sort of a mystery around, you know, who this guy is, what makes him tick, and why is he so guilty? And I think in the film you learn, you know, that it has a lot to do with what happened at this interrogation.
How does the case of Abu Jandal end up illustrating the fact that torture in the United States is just plain ineffective?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a case of a guy who was, I mean, really, in the less than a week after 9/11, the FBI show up in his cell in Yemen, and they interrogate him for over 2 weeks. And every morning they read him his Miranda rights. And it's a interrogation that Ali Soufan, who's, you know, one of the most knowledgeable people about interrogations, cites as an example of doing things by the book and it being effective. And
he wasn't tortured. He wasn't subjected to the so-called enhanced interrogation techniques.
No, I mean, and this was in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. And Ali Soufan's former boss, John O'Neill, was actually killed at the World Trade Center. So you would think in the heat of the moment that this would be the time where we would cross the line, but we didn't. And we did things by the book, and it was an extraordinary, important interrogation. And so, you know, certainly as an American, you wonder why we took the path that we ended up taking in terms of creating these black sites and prolonged detention and illegalization of torture. When you have an example of somebody who was cooperative.
Tell us about the re-education that the Yemeni government, has put Abu Jandal and others through. What exactly does it entail, and is it a successful thing?
Well, you know, people debate it. I mean, what happened with him, there was a cleric, Judge Hattar, who's a, you know, respected Islamic scholar, who went and engaged in this dialogue process with Abu Jandal and other people who were imprisoned, who had involvement with jihad and al-Qaeda, and basically got them to strike a deal to sort of step away from this life, to commit not to fight in Yemen. And they were released. And they also were given, you know, some financial support from the Yemen government. And, you know, and I think with the case of Abu Jandal, it might have been effective. I think he was actually wanting to leave. I think that he had turned away. I think that, as you see in the film, he disagreed with the sort of targeting of civilians. And he was ready to leave. And so, but some, you know, did go back to fight, and some ended up in Iraq.
There's an interesting scene in the film where you ask Abu Jandal a question that the next day, I think, he asks you to delete it.
Mm-hmm.
You made certain choices in the film where you captured intimate moments that I don't think he meant for you to capture. Mm-hmm. How did you decide to keep them in?
Well, I mean, you know, there was an essential, like, unlike my previous work, I mean, there was a tension between myself as a filmmaker and, you know, working with somebody like Abu Jandal, who's clearly so well-trained, very media savvy, and trying to control the situation. So that scene where he asked me to delete something, it's kind of important to show that there is the sort of a push-pull between him wanting to control what's happening and me as the filmmaker, and that there's some sort of a tension there. And I felt that was important with somebody like this because of his, you know, if I was doing an interview with somebody from the government and they asked me to delete something, I don't, you know, it's on the record and this is somebody who, you know, fully consents. So I thought it was important to include that.
And what was the question that he asked you to delete, and why did he ask you, you think?
Well, I don't want to give away too much of the film, but the question was whether or not he would have participated in 9/11. And, I mean, his response was no. And that was what he asked me to delete.
There are a couple of oaths that Abu Jandal has taken that come up in the film. The oath to be a member of al-Qaeda, and then the oath and the re-education process, the dialogue mm-hmm. with the Yemeni government that sort of directly, I think, violates the first oath. Mm-hmm. But he's a devout man. He's somebody with a lot of pride, as you see in the film. Mm-hmm. How does he reconcile these two oaths? And ultimately, is he a traitor or not to Al-Qaeda?
I think that what sort of motivates him as a person is sort of a conflicted feeling of guilt. I mean, it's a look at Al-Qaeda that's sort of looking at things like betrayal, loyalty, and I'll leave it for the audiences to decide whether or not, you know, they think that he is a traitor. But I do think he's somewhat tortured, you know, in terms of his internal, like the decisions he's made and how to move forward in his life.
I'm speaking with Laura Poitras. She is the director of The Oath, her new film. You might have remembered her earlier film, the Academy Award-nominated film, My Country, My Country. One of the scenes earlier in the film, which I thought was really interesting, was this conversation between the young Yemeni and Abu Jandal when the young man tries to question the issue of killing civilians being a bad thing, and how he thought that, you know, isn't it bad to kill innocent women and children? And Abu Jandal, in that particular scene, seems to justify it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, the way that we tell the story is that you enter into it thinking you know where this guy stands, and then we learn information later, which then makes us rethink why he might have taken that stand. And I think that one of the things we learn in the film is that he's being threatened by younger generation of Al-Qaeda. And so I think that...
And literally threatened, like his life is under in danger.
Right. And so I think that, you know, maybe that you understand it one way at the beginning of the film and then maybe it changes. I mean, that's really the way the film unfolds, is that there are certain mysteries.
Mm-hmm. And what is the sort of generational gap, if you will, between the elders in Al-Qaeda,
right,
which it's tricky to call Abu Jandal an elder because he's not, you know, he's more than his 40s, mm-hmm, and then the younger generation.
Yeah, I mean, you see in the film, I mean, there's a whole new generation of people who've been radicalized, and sort of it's a very franchised movement right now. And Abu Jandal has, you know, he has criticisms of this younger generation that they're not driven by anything and they're just interested in violence, you know. So it's kind of shocking to see, you know, somebody who, you know, I think for most Americans would see Abu Jandal as very radical and militant. And then you see him speaking out against sort of like a younger generation who've gone farther. And that's kind of a key to the film, you know, that you look at that there are these young people who are really being radicalized. I mean, you know, and it's, you know, it's frightening. I mean, it's something that, you know, I think as Americans, it has a lot to do with some of the decisions we've made, you know, post 9/11.
Mm. Now, the thread that weaves throughout the film, although we never actually see Salim Hamdan, we hear and read his writings that you weave throughout the film from while he's in Guantanamo. Salim Hamdan, who was a driver of bin Laden and a brother-in-law of your main character in your film, Abu Jandal. Why did you choose to try to make Salim Hamdan a character in your film in a sort of, you know, sideways way? Mm-hmm. When he doesn't even appear face in your film.
Yeah, actually, he does appear. I mean, there's footage of his interrogation that was right after his capture. But as a filmmaker, I mean, I really wanted to present him as a ghost, you know, that there are these people that are missing, and the only link that they have to their families are these letters. And I feel like that it was something that we wanted to be able to move between this world of this taxi driver in Yemen and this sort of ghost that's missing. And, you know, as a filmmaker, you know, with my last film that I made in Iraq, it was also trying to get past, you know, the images that we get in the media are very, we don't really relate to them on any kind of an emotional level. So what are the ways you can tell these stories that will sort of tap into more of the human consequences of what's happening? And we actually meet Salim Hamdan in an interrogation where he has a bag over his head. And then after that, it goes, you know, sort of fast forwards 7 years, and you know, you hear this letter where he says, you know, days and years have gone by and all I have left is God, you know. And it's just, I mean, you know, Guantanamo's still open. I mean, there are people who've been there since, you know, since 2002, since the first planes landed. And I think how to tell these stories in a way that sort of breaks down the situation in a way that's different than the mainstream media does.
Mm. There's an interesting scene in the film where the families of Guantanamo inmates gather in Yemen. Mm-hmm. What was that like to be an American filmmaker surrounded by a very large group of people whose, you know, loved ones were locked up by your government?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I, you know, working there, I was actually spent a lot of time with the International Red Cross, who were, you know, who were the conduits between the prison and the families. And you know, I mean, there's a huge amount of, you know, despair. And there are a lot of people. I mean, right now, the Yemenis are the largest group that are at Guantanamo. And, you know, the vast majority of them have nothing to do with bin Laden. They were in Afghanistan and they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. And, you know, it's kind of shocking that some people have been released and, you know, why this particular group is still waiting. And it has a lot to do with diplomatic impasses between the U.S. government and in Yemen.
Mm-hmm. Another aspect of your film, I think that your film makes an interesting point about is these military tribunals themselves, mm-hmm. the thing that Salim Hamdan became the sort of poster child for his case. And one minor character in your film who I also found very fascinating was the American defense lawyer from the military that had been assigned to Salim Hamdan, who himself brings doesn't really fulfill one's expectations of what a military, defender would be. He's quite critical of the military tribunal system and very openly so. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about him.
Yeah, I mean, the man's name is Brian Meiser, and he's a JAG defense lawyer, and his feeling is that, you know, the tribunal system is you know, fundamentally flawed and illegitimate, and that he's defending Hamdan and then also defending, you know, in his feeling, the Constitution. And that there's a strong belief, I think, particularly among the lawyers who stepped forward in terms of defending these Guantanamos, that there is a rule of law and there are certain principles that, you know, that the United States is founded on, and you don't throw those away. In these circumstances, that people do deserve a day in court and that they do deserve a system that, you know, has, you know, sort of fundamental fairness. And so Brian Meiser, you know, you think you first see him and you probably have a certain expectation. You know, here's this very handsome military guy. And you think, well, you know, is this really going to be the best, you know, defense lawyer for Hamdan? And he really is extraordinary in his passion to defend him.
And probably the reason why Hamdan might finally have received some inkling of justice, should mm-hmm. we put it, although
right.
certainly the U.S. Congress made things quite difficult, as you find out in the film. My guest is Laura Poitras. She is the director of the brand new film, The Oath. Finally, Laura, what do you think Americans can learn about al-Qaeda from this film, just given that so little is often known or acknowledged or understood about the motivations that drive this jihad against the United mm-hmm. States?
I mean, I think there are a number of lessons. I mean, I think what we talked about earlier is that this is a story of an interrogation that was done by the book and that was very effective. This is also a story about a man who was very close to bin Laden who turned away. And I think we need to understand those stories as we sort of move forward and we think of what are the you know, diplomatic decisions that we make, and how can we stop radicalizing this new generation? Because I mean, being an American and having spent, you know, almost a year in Baghdad and then 2 years in Yemen, you can feel this sort of anger, and you know, we need to stop, you know, radicalizing these young guys. You know, that there has to be a change of course. You know, and I think Abu Jandal provides some kind of a key into that, because here's a man who did turn away. And I think, you know, for that, you know, it's a story that we should know better.
He turned away, but it's not like he's a big fan of the U.S. either.
No, he's not.
Well, you'll certainly, listeners can get the full story about Abu Jandal in the film The Oath. Laura Poitras, best of luck to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Laura Poitras is my guest. She is the director of the film The Oath. Her earlier film, My Country, My Country, was nominated for an Academy Award. The Oath opens tonight at Lumley's Sunset 5 Theater at 8000 Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood. And in fact, Laura Poitras will be present for a Q&A at the 7 p.m. screening. Again, The Oath opening tonight at Lumley's Sunset 5 Theater in West Hollywood at 8000 Sunset Boulevard. And if you want to find out more more about the film as well as where it might be screening in your area, check out the website, theoathmovie.com. That's theoathmovie.com.